Our plan is to finish the attributes of God, namely the justice of God, now. We are addressing ourselves to the justice of God. I don't believe there's a single attribute of the divinity which is more frequently both mentioned and extolled in the Bible than God's justice. We'll first ask ourselves, what do we mean by justice in general? Then what does Revelation tell us about God's justice? Then how does God exercise his justice? Obviously, toward his creatures. Then comparing God's justice with ours. And finally, some very practical implications. Absolutely speaking, God's justice is the same as his holiness. This, in the broadest sense, is what we mean when we say that God is just. God is all that God should be. He cannot be otherwise than he is. And all that he is, he must be. But in a more refined sense, drawing the comparison from our own understanding of justice among ourselves, God's justice is called a moral attribute. Moral, because it has to do with the free will of God. Whenever you hear the word moral or morality, always understand that it somehow has to do with the free will. For example, we perform moral actions. They can be either morally good or morally bad. But in either case, moral actions, also called human actions, are those which proceed from our free will. It is well to know, therefore, that when we speak of God's justice as a moral attribute, we imply as an article of our faith that God has a free will which he exercised, for example, when he brought the world into existence. In any case, the justice of God as a moral attribute is his constant readiness or willingness to give to every creature what that creature deserves. He didn't have to make any creatures, but having made them, he will always, as we might say, stands behind them. He will never deprive any creature, from the lowliest insect or flower of the field to the highest angel in the heavens. God always acts justly, properly, rightly, correctly, as that creature either requires by its nature or deserves if the creature has a free will. And then God will act, or perhaps more accurately, will react as that creature deserves. The scriptures are filled with praises of the justice of God, especially the Psalms. The two favorite ones that I have been using over the years are, "For the Lord is just and has loved justice." That's saying more than meets the eye, because God is himself just. He loves those who practice justice, and he hates injustice. And when God hates, he punishes. Again, "You are just, O Lord, and your judgment is just." A very hard saying. When everything is going smoothly in our lives, we can pray or sing this verse from the Psalms with no difficulty. Well, if the hand of God touch us, let trials or sufferings or misunderstanding or failure or bereavement enter our lives, and it may take all the strength of our wills to say, "You are just, O Lord," and with quivering lips add, "and your judgment even here is still just." And I believe our faith in God's justice is most tested when other human beings behave unjustly toward us. Oh, what faith it takes to believe that behind that human free will that may be cruelly unjust to us, somehow mysteriously, is still the justice of God. Not necessarily, as we shall see at great length, because the one who now suffers deserves. God can cause, or at least let's say permit, great suffering even to innocent people and still be perfectly just, because you see, in God's purview, it is not only the individual but society whose benefit God is concerned with. Now, the five ways in which our faith tells us God exercises justice. You might say there are five aspects of this divine attribute. First of all, God is just when he punishes sinners. It is not just in some casual, offhand sense that we say somebody did wrong, they've got it coming to them. No. Two words we should never forget to put together. Let's make them four words, each one a monosyllable. God, man, sin, and pain. God, man, sin, and pain. God being God, the maker of man, the Lord of man, has a right to command his creature to observe certain laws. If man breaks a law of God consciously and deliberately, he sins. Now the two words that are bound up together so closely, they are absolutely inseparable, and they are sin and pain. As I've been telling my students over the years, the most important words in our vocabulary are monosyllables. It is impossible to sin without someone suffering pain. To believe that is to believe in a great deal about who God is, and what on this first level of our reflection He is God's justice. He is just when He causes pain to sinners. In an absolute, ultimate sense, with all the pain, the agony, in the 4 billion some human beings on earth today, faith tells us all their suffering is somehow, mysteriously, the consequence of sin. Not, I repeat, necessarily of the one who suffers. As surely Christ, the all-holy Son of God, who expired in a spasm of pain on the cross, did not himself deserve the pain, but he suffered only because of sin. Second aspect of divine justice. God is just when he rewards the good. Here again, there is more locked up behind that short sentence than meets the eye. Just as it is impossible ever to sin without deserving from God's justice to suffer, so it is just as impossible, isn't that consoling, to ever do any good in the moral order without, what are we saying, without God binding himself in justice to reward us. Living a virtuous life, obeying God's commandments, doing his will, with apologies for the expression, is very good, profitable business. The dividends are high. And there's no danger of God running out of the reward that he always stores up for every single, even most trifling action we perform. We forget God never does. Third reflection on the justice of God. God is just in providing every creature what that creature needs according to its nature. Again, we are saying more than the words themselves might seem to indicate. It is not only that God has, as it were, bound himself in justice to provide birds with what they need to fulfill their purpose as birds, or the air its purpose as air, or the sun, moon, and stars for their purpose. But God provides us, rational human beings, with all that we need, all that we need to fulfill the divinely ordained purpose that he had from all eternity for us, human beings. Well, there is more still. No two of us are identical. And whenever we find other people trying or difficult, because we consider them at least somewhat eccentric, let's remember that it is not only that each of us is a different human being, but in God's plan, each one of us has different needs to fulfill. And God provides in his justice for every single one of us according to the differences that each of us so obviously possesses. God will provide all that we need to reach our destiny. How easy it is to make the statement. How hard it is to live up to our faith in the fact that God never deprives any of his creatures of what they need to fulfill their purpose in existence. You begin to see immediately, and let's savor this as we say it, you see immediately that God in his justice, binding himself to fulfill all that we need, fulfills all that we need not only as human individuals or persons, but all that we need as this individual with these gifts and limitations. Everything about us is part of God's providence. God has, listen to this, the same basic destiny for all. We are all made for heaven. But no two of us are to reach that destiny in the same identical way. Fourth reflection on God's justice. God is just in being faithful to His promises. Time and again, for example, during the centuries when the chosen people, as they were called, generation after generation, they proved unfaithful to Yahweh. So what happened? They were taken captive, thrown into slavery, scattered among the pagans. Yet, God was true to His promises. He never finally abandoned His people. And the fulfillment of the centuries-long promises of Yahweh to the chosen people in the old law was climaxed at Nazareth. One after one rebellion and rejection of one prophet after another that Yahweh sent them. And even though God foresaw that His chosen people would reject His only begotten Son, yet He was faithful to His promises, and the Messiah, the Son of Mary, was born of a Jewish woman, the climax of the Jewish race. When God makes His promises, He keeps them. This, by the way, is why breaking marriage promises is such blasphemy. Because when a couple marry and promise one another fidelity until death, there is a third partner in that contract, namely God. And as the history of our faith tells us, when we make such solemn promises, as I made when I took my last vows, in 1953, as a Jesuit, or you who married, when you married, you promised God that you would remain faithful. God made a promise to provide all the grace you need until death. That's why vows are so sacred in the eyes of God, and breaking them is such a sin in the eyes of a just God who is faithful to His promises. He will provide the means, provided we do our part in fulfilling our part of the promise. Finally, God is just in giving all men sufficient grace for their salvation. This justice of God, therefore, is not only of the natural order, it is also and especially in the supernatural order, in the order of grace. God wants everyone to reach heaven, and God will provide everyone. We are not saying with equal grace, even to any two people, but sufficient grace for everyone to reach his or her heavenly destiny. Now, a few comments before we close. The justice of God is not like ours. Thank God. When we deal with other human beings, giving them, as we say, what they have a right to, which is what justice is, we are dealing with equals. But when we speak of God as being just towards us, we use the word justice, all right, because we've got to use some word. It bears some analogy to justice among ourselves. While the word could well be put in quotation marks. What's the importance of that? That God is always just with everyone. He's never unjust to any of his creatures, but he is not unjust in dealing differently with different creatures. He gives some more, obviously, some less, obviously, with apologies for the expression. God does not belong to a labor union. He is just towards everyone, even when his justice is, as we say, uneven. Absolute equality is human mythology. To know that and believe it is to know a lot. We may call God's justice distributive justice. Having freely created, God gives to his creatures everything to make it possible for them to fulfill the purpose of their existence. But I come back, and with this I close. Always distributive justice, all right, but this is God. He could have made everyone in this room, with apologies for the expression, a lowly flea. Right? And if a flea could think, it wouldn't dare complain. Why didn't you make me a human being? Oh, what peace of mind, a proper understanding of God's justice brings to us human beings who are so obviously unequal, and yet all, from the least to the greatest of us, sing and proclaim, "You are just, O Lord, and your judgment is absolutely just." Thank you for listening.